Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome along, one and all. Friends, enemies, acquaintances,
lovers.
Oh, brothers in arms and mothers in palms. Here we are to talk about franchises, because this is, of course, Film Franchise Fortnights on the Cold Pop Podcast. My name is AJ, and I'm joined once more by Richard over there.
Yo, yo, what's up, everybody?
Hey, gang, how's it going? This is a podcast where we watch and discuss a different franchise every fortnight. We've done everything from God's Not Dead to... I did it the wrong way around. From Godfather to Godzilla
to God's Not Dead.
And that complete scattershot of genre in film franchise continues this fortnight as we watch the four films in the Barbershop series. The Barbershop Quartet.
Thank you very
much. If you will, Richard. If they are not selling all four of these movies as the Barbershop Quartet in bargain bins across the world, they are missing out on money.
What the, it's such a good idea. They wouldn't even be in a bargain bin. In any price you pay,
right,
is a bargain for that idea.
I'd pay $10,000 for a fallback of the Barbershop movies called the Barbershop Quartet. We're talking about the Barbershop films this fortnight, which consist of the film Barbershop in 2002, the film Barbershop 2 Back in Business in 2004, a spin-off called Beauty Shop in 2005, and then all the way in 2016 we had Barbershop The Next Cut. The series broadly is about a barbershop in a predominantly African-American neighborhood in Chicago.
It sounds like you're... What are you doing here?
I'm trying... We discussed in our correspondence that it's kind of like Black Clerks, and I'm not saying that to be disrespectful. I'm saying I actually think these films are incredibly like inspired by Clerks. It's people in their place of work, and there's a loose story with lovable characters, and every now and then one of them will break out into like a really voice of the writer conversation on some kind of current event. Probably about five times per film the Barbershop would stop to have what I thought was kind of like a little bit of an uneducated conversation about social issues, and that shows up in every film. So, the series mainly stars Ice Cube as Calvin Palmer Jr., who inherited the barbershop from his father and his father before him.
Mm-hmm.
It also stars Cedric the Entertainer as Eddie, a man who is much older than Cedric the Entertainer.
Yeah.
And if you're not really paying attention, you'll find yourself Googling, how old is Cedric the Entertainer?
Did you think, really interesting, did you not pick up that he was playing a much older character?
No, I did, but I'm just saying, like, very unfamiliar with Cedric the Entertainer's work. So at one point I was like, he's playing like a man in like his 80s, and I'm pretty sure that's not the actual age of Cedric the Entertainer. And there's also Queen Latifah as Gina, who is only in one of the Barbershop movies, but frontlines the spin-off Beauty Shop. There's also an assortment of other character actors and rap artists you may or may not recognize who show up in the various films. We're talking Eve. We're talking Sean Patrick Thomas, Troy Garrity, Michael Ealy, Dion Cole, Anthony Anderson, Keith David, Alicia Silverstone, Andy McDowell, Alfre Woodard, Mina Savari, Kevin Bacon, Digimon Honsu, Regina Hall, Nicki Minaj.
Digimon.
Is that not how you say it?
No, it's Jaimon.
I apologize. We're also got Common, Lamorne Morris, Utkarsh Ambakhtar, JB Smoove, and a blink and you'll miss it on-screen debut from one Lauren Kiki Palmer. Has her first ever role as, I don't know even know if the character has lines in Barbershop 2, I believe. Something I found interesting in setting up for this episode, Richard, is that Ice Cube is not credited as writer for any of these. Does this not just scream passion project of Ice Cube?
Oh, no, that never once crossed my mind. That's really interesting. I was like, when you're like, it's crazy he's not credited as a writer. I was like, yeah, because he probably didn't write any of them.
He feels like what Vin Diesel is to the Fast and Furious franchise for this franchise.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I didn't pick up on that at all.
Didn't pick up on that?
No.
Maybe it's because he took over from Vin Diesel in XXX2, The Return.
What's it called?
State of the Nation. And so I kind of intrinsically link those two actors as being similar in my mind. What do you think of Ice Cube?
This was one of the big things I wanted to talk about, is like, do you think Ice Cube's a good actor?
No, I also don't think he's very cool.
I mean, it's one of those things that like, because he's done stuff like, he's in the Are We There Yet? Are We Done Yet? That's him, right?
Yeah.
And he's done movies like that where, yeah, it's interesting that like, because this dude was like genuinely like
a freedom fighter.
Yeah, in the 90s and like one of sort of like the primary voices in the like gangster rap movement and, you know, really put like West Coast hip hop on the map and all the stuff that like, you know, genuinely like earned his fair share of cred and stuff like that. And yeah, I think that he's one of those people that is maybe not necessarily a good actor, but I think he's got a really good screen presence. Like I really like watching him in these films and like 21, 22 Jump Street. I think he's great at that. He does like some good voiceover work in the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I'm trying to think of like what else I've actually seen him in, but
the last I heard of Ice Cube is he walked off set because he's anti-vax.
That's right. Yeah. I forgot about that.
and that just existed in my mind through all their little socio-political conversations that they have in these films.
Yeah.
That was like front and center of my mind.
Yeah, that's right. That film, it was called Oh Hell No. It's now called Step Dude.
Step Dude.
Yeah.
Very good times.
But yeah, no, I think, yeah, it's more that he's got a good... Yeah, I enjoy watching him on screen. I think he's got a good presence. I think he's like I like his voice, his like intonation, and I think he plays a certain type of character well. And I do think that like Barbershop is a bit of a different side of him than I've seen. You know, that like he plays, and you know that they joke about this in the film, but the sort of like angry black man police captain in the 21, 22 Jump Street, where he's very much like playing into a stereotype there. And then to be this kind of like positive male role model in the Barbershop films, I enjoyed it.
How do you think Ice Cube feels about playing a police chief?
Yeah, I was thinking about that it's like, I mean, I think that probably is inherently part of the joke of him being cast in 21 Jump Street is that the guy that's saying, fuck the police, is playing a police chief.
Nice. Alrighty, well, Barbershop, the first film, came out in 2002. It was directed by Tim Story. My favourite Pixar, I don't know. You said to me something about Tim Story. You were surprised to learn he directed this.
Yeah, he directed the Fantastic Four movies from 2005 to 2007.
The beloved Tim Story Fantastic Four films.
Yeah.
What do you think this film has on Rotten Tomatoes?
I would guess like 70.
It's got 83%, which is very respectable. Yeah. I did not think it would have that. What is this movie about?
So this movie is about, like, you sort of set up the general premise of Ice Cube plays this guy who owns a barbershop. And it's the business is struggling, and then a loan shark, played by Keith David, buys the shop off him, and then he decides he doesn't want to sell it, and the vision is sort of that he had, and like, you know, letting down his father's legacy, and he's, you know, then it's him trying to get enough money to get the to buy it back, because now Keith David's demanding like twice as much money. There's also like this whole subplot with like a stolen ATM that's like it's very B-plotty. Like, it's not really connected that much to the main plot, but it's got Anthony Anderson, mm-hmm. who's a lot of fun to watch.
Mm. Yeah, and it ends up being that the way these two stories converge, and they manage to basically pin the stolen ATM machine potentially on Keith David, and then they get a $50,000 reward for finding it.
Yeah.
So it all works out very, very sort of serendipitously. Richard, what did you think of this movie? Had you seen it before?
Tell you what, I hadn't seen this film before. Before we get into what we thought of it, because I know you have a story about having seen this before, right?
I have a very silly story about having seen this before. Yeah, I remember you telling me this.
Yeah.
Are you going to laugh if I tell it again, or should we just forego it completely to save myself?
Well, tell the story.
When I was 20 or 21 in my first ever flat, I flatted with a guy named Isaac, who's completely different from me. So different, I can confidently say he probably doesn't even know this podcast exists, let alone if he's listened. He's currently a PE teacher, you know, very sporty.
The opposite
of you.
But
we were pretty close friends. The opposite of me, but we were pretty close friends. And one day he was just like, I'm going to put on Barbershop. And I was like, okay, I'll watch Barbershop with you. And we watched Barbershop, and then it ended, I reckon it would have finished around maybe 10 at night. And I said to him, dude, we got to watch Barbershop 2. We absolutely have to. We've just watched Barbershop 1. Let's watch Barbershop 2. And he's like, yeah, we've got to watch the Holy Trilogy. And I was like, oh, Beauty Shop. You keep including that. And so we put on Barbershop 2. It finishes at midnight. And I'm like, Isaac, we've got to watch Beauty Shop. And he's like, I got work in the morning, man. I'm going to bed. I was like, Isaac, you can't just stop the Holy Trilogy halfway through. And he's like, it's a spin-off, bro. It doesn't actually count. I was like, everyone knows that the Holy Trilogy is Barbershop, Barbershop 2 Back in Business, and Beauty Shop. Everyone knows that. And then our other flatmate, Zusha, got out of bed and was like, can you guys shut the fuck up? And that's the story. I did watch Barbershop and Barbershop 2 back to back on the same night with my flatmate, who was very much not a movie person.
That's
so it's
funny,
just this funny sort of memory.
Yeah, I remember your time with that story and finding it quite funny. But the... you at midnight telling someone who has work in the morning, nah, bro, we have to stay up and watch the third one, is such an AJ thing to do.
Absolutely. Proudly so. I think that's a fun thing to about having me as a friend.
Like, yeah, I remember one time I was like standing up to go to bed, and then we were talking, and I brought up I've never seen Signs. And you said, like, it's real good, but it's quite long. We should watch it right now. And I was like... I'm going, like, I've initiated going to bed. I am on my way to bed.
Well,
there was a time where we're back in the day when we first started the podcast, where we were like really restricting ourselves with the rules of it, and it was doing Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street in the same week, and we ended up having to watch like 14 films in the same weekend.
Yeah.
And then we didn't start recording till after midnight. And I had work in the morning, and like an early start too. And then I was driving on the down the motorway and started to like drift off because I was literally falling asleep. And so I was like, yeah, I almost like crashed and died because we started. But it's like, we could have recorded that on Tuesday. We were releasing on Fridays at the time. We recorded like Sunday night. And it's like, we could have recorded this on Wednesday night if we wanted to.
Oh, man, if you had died, that would still haunt me to this day. It would have ruined my life.
Me too.
If you had died because of... Absolutely. So what did you think of Barbershop?
I fucking loved this film. I thought it was great, man. I loved all of these films. I thought it was... I think this is, spoilers for the rest of the podcast, one of like the most consistent franchises we've ever covered, in my opinion.
A gold star, perhaps.
Definitely a gold star franchise. But it's, yeah, I thought it was such a good time. And it's like this really interesting thing that it's like, it is just this real insight into a, you know, a different culture. And like, it feels so authentically portrayed. It's like, you know, because we've watched like black films before, and Like the most sort of obvious example is the Madea films, which
a podcast you can no longer find on our feed.
Yeah,
because we were young, and I'll say it's stupid.
Yeah,
and we just weren't the most respectful as we should have been as young 23-year-old white dudes, I guess.
Yeah,
we're sorry, we regret it. We took it down. So
yeah, but well, I also just like nothing like cancelable, just stuff that it's like I don't have to stand by this.
No, I have no obligation to stand up for who I was when I was 23.
And if you can't look back and cringe at stuff 7 years ago, you haven't grown as a person. Mm. But it just feels very, these films feel very authentic. And like what you were saying about the Clerks comparison, I haven't seen Clerks, to be honest, but it's like that very like slice of lifey kind of film. And I think the characters all just, I mean, Cedric the Entertainer is kind of like the odd one out, and we will talk about him a bit more, I'm sure, but like I don't know, the characters all felt like really authentic, and like the actual barbershop itself felt like it had this history, and you can understand like the importance of it in the south side of Chicago. But yeah, like I kept in my head making comparisons to like the Madea films, but it's because it's like these films that, like, you know, it's advertised as this comedy, but it's like, oh, it actually deals with these like social issues and stuff, more so like some, like especially the third film or the 2016 film. But it's like, yeah, I don't know, it just deals with it in a lot more organic way, I thought. Like the comedy doesn't undermine the drama, and the drama doesn't undermine the comedy or anything. Yeah. And
boy, does Cedric Entertainer bring us to that line, though. Right?
Well, that's the thing. But I think that it's like Cedric the Entertainer's character is kind of like a light version of the Madea character, where it's like, I can imagine there's a lot of people that grew up in this kind of, like with a local barbershop that was this kind of, you know, they call it the original man cave. And that he's like playing a pastiche of like a very specific type of person. And I'm sure it resonates really like hard for those audiences. But looking even back to Coming to America, there was like the famous, there's the barbershop scene that as well. And that has like a
very similar as
It has like an older character and that as well, you know, who's played by a younger person and older makeup. And it's very clearly there's like a character that it's parodying that I've never met in real life. And I do think that maybe they could, like, because Cedric the Entertainer is great and he's capable of like incredible performances, like he's in First Reformed, but he,
I thought you were gonna say Madagascar.
I was not, but he and so I think that it's like getting, you know, I can see why you got like the comedian to play that character and everything like that, but I think it would have helped the film a bit more if you actually got like an older actor to play that part. I mean, he's not even like, I don't think he would have been that much older, but I was thinking like Bernie Mac would have been great for that role.
Yeah, right.
Mm.
Yeah, interesting. Do you think it's a blemish on the franchise, this character?
Well, it's one of those things that it's like, I love when films aren't for me, and that I can like, and especially, you know, and then even more so when I can still enjoy it and it's not for me, but I'm not someone that's going to review bomb the Marvels because I'm like, you've made one that's not for me. And I actually really like the Marvels as well. But it's cool to see films that aren't made for me. And so to have an inside joke that I can still enjoy, I still like the character, but it's like, this has such a deeper level to people who don't look like me, people who don't have the same background as me. I think it's a little, like, his character is a little strange, or they could have gotten someone more age appropriate. But it's like, you know, there are people out there that are like, that's their favorite film character of all time, I'm sure. And seeing their favorite comedian play, you know, this like prominent archetype from their life, it's like, I'm not going to take that away from them. It's not even a blemish on the film necessarily. Like, it doesn't take me out of it or anything like that. It's just something that it's like, if me, a 9-year-old white kid from New Zealand, was tasked with directing this film at the time, I probably would have cast someone different, but what do I know?
When you said the Marvels before,
yeah,
I misheard you as the Marbles. And I was like, what's the, oh, is this like another Oscar front runner that you've seen ahead of time that I've yet to see? I can't wait till they do a red carpet interview and I edit the Marbles cast four favorites. One character, another character in this film that I thought probably stood out, it felt like more out of place than Cedric the Entertainer's Eddie, was Keith David's character, who's a villain.
I thought it was great.
It's like the rest of the movie is this grounded, like, sort of, you know, the hardships of being the working class and such a, like, you know, dangerous part of town and all these things coming into it. And then Keith David walks in straight off, like, he's like he's playing a live-action version of his character from Princess and the Frog. Like, he's such a, like, Disney villain that just waltzes in, is like, I'm gonna... And he like, just flagrantly tricks Ice Cube into selling him the shop, and then he's like immediately like, surprise, I'm actually evil and I'm going to turn this into a strip club. And then they're like, we just did a verbal agreement, can I have my money back? And he's like, no. It's like, is that how it works? So we, one of the controversies that this film faced is interesting because so as I said, these films are full of the characters just suddenly breaking out into discussing some socio-political issue. And usually it gets interrupted midway through by Eddie, Cedric the Entertainer's character, who will come out to bat with, I felt, just horrible takes. And maybe that's the point, but that being said, I do think there is like some troubling underlining stances that I think the people behind the films had, but it was 2002. Who didn't have these problems? But the one that really like irked me is Eddie goes on a rant about how Rosa Parks
essentially she was riding the coattails of like Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. Yeah. And that all she did was sit on the bus.
Yeah, the exact quote here is, Rosa Parks ain't do nothing but sit her black ass down. There's a whole lot of other people that sat down on the bus, and they did it way before Rosa did. He also refers to Martin Luther King as a hoe, and then says of Jesse Jackson, fuck Jesse Jackson. So in September 2002, Reverend Jesse Jackson responded to these statements and said that him and another Reverend Al Sharpton pressured MGM to edit these scenes out of the film before its DVD release in January because they felt it was unfair to them. The film was released with the controversial scenes intact. I guess my ickiness from that scene in particular comes from the fact that, like, it's like we're praising all these like male leaders in the black in the civil rights like movement, and it's like the one female they bring up, he has to like go on a tirade.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's interesting because it's one of those things that it's like, are you supposed to agree with the character? Like, he's
I think you're supposed to like the character.
Yeah, he's portrayed as like a bit of a crazy old man from time to time, but you know, is really like has a backstory and stuff. But yeah, like there's the bit where he says that there's like the three things that black people need to admit is like, one, Rodney King deserved to get beaten, OJ did it.
Oh my god.
And three, Rosa Parks did nothing but sit on a bus.
OJ did it's pretty funny, but the Rodney King thing is like, because that's not real. He doesn't even say that as a joke. He says like, he infers that Rodney King had some kind of like
the line is shady. Three things. Number one, Rodney King should have got his ass beat for being drunk in a Hyundai in a white part of Los Angeles.
I don't know, man. I feel like maybe I shouldn't be commenting on
this. Well, this is the thing. I mean, like, this is the whole podcast, right? Like, but I think that...
like, do you mean, like, broadly that this is what cult culture is?
This is what cult culture is about, is us commenting on things that we're not qualified to. No, like, I think that, like, to me, that reads as a joke. And I think that there is, like, a little bit of a... there's been a little bit of a change in how we treat subjects like this in the last 20 years. But yeah, like the thing that it's like, you know, saying driving a Hyundai in a white part of Los Angeles is like something that you deserve to get beaten for. And like the OJ did it thing is clearly a joke. But I think that we Because also there's some interesting jokes in the third film, which become dated so quickly.
What a dated film the next cut is.
But like that they...
like the next day it would have been dated.
Yeah, but the way...
Like that film's shelf life does not surpass 1 year.
Yeah, there's a bit in that they talk about Prince being someone who is sexually ambiguous but can still get heaps of ladies. And he died 6 days later. I think that there's pre-Trump, really, it's like we were a lot more comfortable joking about like the other side of things. And whereas like, you know, you could have a character where it's like, oh, this dude is crazy because he, to use an extreme example, like, you know, as a Holocaust denier kind of thing, or like, or even as like a flat earther. And now, and you know, you could do that because like, well, this is such a ridiculous belief to hold. And now it's like, no, there are actually dangerous people out there that believe these things, and we can't give that side
it's
a voice.
It's not fun anymore.
Yeah, and like one of the big things is that like, there's an episode of Scrubs where they talk about like Elliot coming out as a Republican, and there's like a bunch of jokes in New Girl about it as well. There's like a video essay on this that it's like, yeah, you don't have, in liberal leaning shows, you don't have characters be Republican now because it's like, well, they're evil. and in the third film, there's like this whole thing about like this bit where he's, one of the characters is like, all right, if you win, I'll vote Democrat.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Gobsmacking joke in 2016's Barbershop 3.
Yeah. That it's like, yeah, literally this character was planning to vote for Trump until he made this bit. But yeah, I think that I get what you mean about like the icky stuff around the Rosa Parks thing and how that can make, you know, makes you uncomfortable. But I think that it's intended as a joke, but that's maybe me just being giving the film too much credit. But yeah.
Well, do you have anything else you'd like to say about the first film, or shall we start chatting about Back in Business?
We can get back in business. I will say that I was, to transition to the second film, I was sad to see Anthony Anderson not show up, because he's hilarious, man. That dude's great.
Yeah. Alrighty, so Barbershop 2 Back in Business came out in 2004. It was directed by Kevin Rodney Sullivan. What do you think this has on Rotten Tomatoes?
I would guess probably still around the same, 65 to 70.
Yeah, it's got 68% on Rotten Tomatoes. I'd seen it before, as I discussed earlier. What is this movie about?
Oh, yeah. So the second film is about, there's now a rival barbershop that's going to open up across the road.
Do you know what it is?
Nappy Cuts.
It's Good Burger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's the same plot as Good Burger.
Yeah.
It even has Kenan Thompson.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so we're introduced to some new characters, and like, you know, there's all these interpersonal relationships and stuff.
I didn't have him in my list of character actors for some reason.
But so Nappy Cuts, the whole thing is that it's like it's like a club that you can go to get your hair cut. And so the whole film is them sort of trying to reestablish, what's actually the name of the barber? It's just Calvin's or something, isn't it?
Calvin's shop.
Yeah. That like, they're trying to, you know, rebrand and make sure everyone knows that it's like, this is the cornerstone of Southside Chicago. And yeah, that's more or less.
Yeah, so it's about, it's the area of town that the barbershop's in is getting gentrified.
Yeah.
And someone, like a crooked dude running for mayor, is like, it basically him and another guy, they talk to Calvin and just before the third act, and they sort of say to him like, hey, look, if you can convince the other store owners around that it's a good thing that the place is getting gentrified, not only will we turn Nappy Cuts into something else, but we'll let you keep your shop. And earlier in the film, his contemporaries, is that what a store owner would call the owners of the other stores around him? His fellow store owners are thinking of selling, and he's like, nah, don't. And so he goes to the like hearing and basically says like, fuck that, it's bad, we should all be proud of our small businesses, et cetera, et cetera. And the, but the motion passes anyway. But not to fear, it turns out that Calvin did such a good job representing the community that they still have a loyal customer base.
And nappy cuts
still existing across the road, which is a very optimistic thing to say in a capitalist society. It's like, you were just good enough. You were good enough that customers were loyal.
I don't know why you are so cynical with these films, AJ. I thought this film was great. It's a Godfather 2. Where we see some backstory of Eddie. And what I thought a pretty decent backstory.
I agree.
What does it take place during? Is it
the assassination of
Martin Luther King. Rioting in the streets, and like there's all these, you know, all these shops are getting broken into and everything. Mm. And yeah, Eddie's there at the shop where he comes into it, and this dude comes into starts running towards it with like a Molotov cocktail or a brick or something, about to smash down the window, and he just gives them this, like, you know, very powerful just like stop from inside the shop, and is just like, don't do it.
Yeah.
And then that saves the shop so that's why he's never had to pay chair rent
for a haircut
in the barbershop.
Yeah. And this was when Calvin's father ran the shop.
So yeah, it's a flashback.
In the 60s. Yeah. Yeah. This is interesting. I talked recently on the show, I can't remember what episode, it might have been a Patreon episode, so I apologize if it was, but I talked about the movie Return to the Batcave, where Adam West and Burt Ward play themselves, and it's like this ridiculous scary movie logic, as in, you know, spoof movie logic, but then it has flashbacks to the making of the Batman TV series that are treated quite seriously. And that's kind of how I felt about this. I cannot overstate how silly of a character Eddie is intended to be, right? Like, it is literally a dude in old man makeup spouting out old man stereotypes. And then they give him these flashbacks where not only is what you just said, like, there's also like
his the lost stuff love.
Where he like has lost love, who he sees on another train and runs across town to get to the next train stop so that he can meet her. And the way these flashbacks are filmed, like an actual film from like the 60s or 70s, like it's got that grain to it. It's got this wonderful color palette to it. I was watching this, I was like, this is great, man. Like, this is awesome. I didn't remember this from when I first saw it. But it's just genuinely really well directed, specifically in those scenes. And then you just come back to Eddie and he's like, oh, I farted, you know, whatever his jokes are. I thought that was great. And I think this is probably my favorite one of the franchise, mainly just for those scenes, which, to be honest, I don't think amounted to what they could have amounted to.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. Just the authenticity of the camera, like, work and aesthetic. I was like, show me this whole movie, Kevin Rodney Sullivan. Show me Barbershop Origins.
Yeah, that's good. It's the thing as well that I really enjoyed about these films, and, you know, so clear in the second ones specifically, when like the whole film was about like, no, this is like an institution. But it's like, it is really interesting how in black culture it is such a, like, the barbershop is this like thing, and it's like this hangout spot. And even just the fact that, like, you know, you think of like when you think of a hairdresser, the stereotype of what a hairdresser is very different in white culture than it is in black culture. And so, yeah, it's just like, it's just fascinating that it's like, you know, it's one of these things where it's like, I long to have nostalgia for like something else. Like, I remember talking to you once about how like listening to Castle on the Hill by Ed Sheeran is like, you were sad you never had a castle on the hill. And it's like,
damn.
I was sad I never had like a...
I don't remember saying that, but I absolutely said it.
I don't know. It's like, oh man, I wish, like, you know, this hangout spot for like, we have whole different generations of like, you know, I'm using this term broadly, like good male role models. But, like, you know, especially, you know, in this, the, when the stereotype in, like, African-American culture is that there's a lack of good male role models.
Sure.
And that it's like, you can go to this barbershop, hang out there, like, all day, get your hair cut, and you've got, you know, this like, crazy old man who's got incredible stories. And, you know, there's people that just, like, all look out for each other. And the other thing that I really liked about this, and I think it's mainly the second one, and then also in Beauty Shop, is like how they, like most of the films have like a token white character that works there, and how they treat that character. Because in, it feels like, you know, in something maybe more like a Madea film, it would be like they would be the butt of every joke. And but it's like, no, that like that there is jokes at the expense of the white character sort of thing, but it is like, no, he's like, he's a part of, or Alicia Silverstone and Beauty Shop is like, they're a part of this culture, and they've been like accepted into it. And it, like it's a nice layer to the film. And also, like, I don't know, white people should be able to laugh at themselves more.
Yeah, so in Barbershop 1 and 2, Troy Garrity plays a character named Isaac, who's the white barber at the barbershop. And, like, in the second film, it's like he's the best barber there. Mm. And, like, people go and get haircuts from him, and they get him to shave a little lowercase I into the back of their head because it's, like, a signature. And I was really drawn to that for some reason. I was like, wow, like a haircut that you ruin, not completely.
Yeah, like,
but,
a calling card.
Do it. Yeah, like a calling card. That's cool. That's cool. One thing I thought was funny about this movie is that in the opening credits, it says special appearance by Queen Latifah. Queen Latifah is just blatantly a main character in this film. Appears plenty. Like, it's not like it's just a cast member, but they're like, special appearance by Queen Latifah. What do you think of Queen Latifah's character? Do you think she is deserving of a spin-off?
Yeah, only one like, year she's later? She's another one that I just think has like a great screen presence. She's fun to watch, and yeah, I mean, it's I like Queen Latifah.
Yeah, I've got a review from Roger Ebert on this film. He said, "Did I like the film? Yeah, kinda, but not enough to recommend. film arrived with freshness and an unexpected zing, but this one seems too content to follow in its footsteps." I think it's pretty content to follow in the footsteps of like The Godfather 2. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's necessarily derivative of
Barbershop 1.
But it is funny. Like there's a scene in this where they're like, let's break into Nappy Cuts and see what's going on, you know, and they break in and they're looking around, and then a customer, well, a person outside sees that he thinks they're open. He's like, oh, let me get a haircut, and they just sort of improvise their way through it. And then Ice Cube is like, that's it, I'm getting out of here, don't steal anything, walks out right and like walks right into a cop. And I was like, here's the third act. Calvin's going to go to prison.
Yeah.
You know, like he'll cover for them, et cetera, et cetera. But it's just like the cop's just like, did you steal anything? Because he knows him. He's like, did you steal anything? Mm. He's like, nah. And it's like, all right. And it's like, oh, okay. That's it. That's the end of that storyline.
Yeah, I liked that. It was a good subversion. Like, yeah, I don't know. These films touch on social issues, but there's like, they don't just deal with, and this is the whole thing about like, you get this a lot in with queer cinema, that it's like so much of it is just like about misery.
Sure.
And it's like, yeah, like I'm glad that Ice Cube didn't go to jail for this, because it's just like, yeah, that you don't, the films don't need to be about like they do deal with like social issues and like race struggle and things like that. But it's like, yeah, the film isn't about misery. Mm. And whereas, like, you know, it's only just very recently that, like, we're getting acclaimed films about gay relationships that have happy endings.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these films, they're like, you know, these fringe sort of things that, you know, that were once fringe and cinema was like, well, if, you know, to do it, you have to really tell the story of the struggle.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Richard, only a year later, after Barbershop Back in Business. Barbershop Back to Business. No, Barbershop 2 Back in Business. Not Back to Business. we got Beauty Shop, directed by Billy Woodruff. What do you think this has on Rotten Tomatoes?
I would hope it has mid-60s.
I'm so sorry to break the news to you, Richard. It only has 38% on Rotten Tomatoes. A score which kind of baffles me because of how on the same line these movies all feel like. What is Beauty Shop about?
So, yeah, the character Gina, who Queen Latifah in the last film, has now moved from Chicago to Atlanta, and...
Which explains the accents. And if you missed that they've relocated to Atlanta, you'll spend a lot of this film being like, why is Alicia Silverstone doing that? Why is she doing that accent? It's because they're in Georgia.
Yeah, that's really funny. so she has this disagreement with her boss, played by Kevin Bacon, and then starts her own shop. And it's sort of just like the struggle of getting her own place off the ground, and with this
it moves through some very similar beats from the first Barbershop movie, I will say that,
it's fine. But the whole time they're listening to this radio talk show host Holler and Helen, and they fucking love her, and then they're struggling, the place is gonna go under, and then this woman comes in with her hair like a mess, absolutely just like gone to the dogs, and they're like, all right, you know, we'll fix you up, don't you worry. And then they turn on the radio, and lo and behold, the woman that came in last minute was Holler and Helen, and she gives a shout out to the beauty shop, and they, boy, do they stay in business.
Presumably they're not mentioned in the
next they do not come up again.
What did you think of this one?
I, on par with the last two. I really enjoyed it.
Kevin Bacon is so funny in this. Yeah. And it would have been so funny to film this. I can imagine, you know, like...
Because he has this ridiculous accent and then it's revealed he's putting it on.
I missed that was established. And then the last thing you see of him is just yelling in like a normal American accent. I was like, is this supposed to be Austrian still? He's completely lost it. And then when I was researching today, I saw it. I was like, no, he's just from Nebraska.
Yeah.
He plays Jorge.
Yeah.
And he's like, Jorge wants what Jorge gets.
It's funny, like Kevin Bacon's a real funny actor because he's like, growing up, you think of like Kevin Bacon as a real serious actor. But then it's like, he's in some silly shit.
He's done some silly shit.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I only really know him from like silly shit where he has a wig and an accent.
I would say I agree somewhat that this is the weakest one, maybe. I think just the derivativeness of it, I didn't find the character drama like reaches... Like Barbershop's not afraid to be like, this movie's actually about like the criminal underbelly of Southside Chicago, whereas this is a lot more friendly, I think. There's Octavia Spencer, Academy Award winner Octavia Spencer, has maybe 2.5 lines in this film. She is credited as Big Customer. Big Customer joins the ranks of other thankless pre-Oscar roles that we've seen Spencer play in film franchise Fortnights, alongside Chicken Girl from Spider-Man, a security guard in Legally Blonde 2 Red, White, and Blonde, Nurse Daniels in Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, and of course Opal the sex worker in Bad Santa and Bad Santa 2. I presumably bought back for Bad Santa 2 as a to be like, look who was in the first one, I don't remember. But, yeah, I think it's so funny. She's because I knew of Octavia Spencer before she was an Academy Award winner, and I knew her from roles like these, you know. And then it's like who is going to win an Oscar next? You know, like who's the next Octavia Spencer who has like a 20-year career in bit roles? And then is going to be given like the opportunity.
Or like, what is it, like Vigorous Masturbation Guy from The Leftovers, or like Handjob Girl or something like that from The Leftovers?
Who's that?
There's like a famous like credit that's like, Mom, I got a part in a show. Like, what's the part, sweetie? It's like Vigorous Masturbating Guy.
Because like, I feel like it's not quite, the disparity's not quite as large, but someone like J.K. Simmons,
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
As well, winning an Oscar was like, wow, J.K. Simmons, like
the yellow
the dude from this role and this role, you know? I'm sure there are better examples of people who have you know, cut their teeth on the bit character department before winning an Oscar. But yeah, let us know if you can think of any, because I'm sure there's ones that I'm not thinking
of.
Who won the last bunch? I'm sure if I looked at the last nominees...
The last bunch was Jamie Lee Curtis, Ke-Huy Quan, Michelle Yeoh,
Brendan Fraser. Yeah. All right, bad example. But look back far enough, you'll be able to prove it.
Well, I mean, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, the idea that Short Round would win an Oscar seemed pretty insane.
Well, there you go. Yeah, there you go, actually. Exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's interesting. Like, this film, this is one of the classic, like, female reboots of a film, really, that it's like,
yeah,
it does establish the character in the last film, and it's like, you know, there's all these technicalities, but it's like things like the gender swapped reboot as we know it now, like, you know, Ghostbusters being the classic example, it's like, yeah, this is kind of one. But it's interesting because, like, and I think that the lower Rotten Tomatoes score is like because of this, but I think that like Ghostbusters was like, hey, all you Ghostbusters fans, like, meet the new Ghostbusters. We're replacing the old ones. Like, everything that you know, this is what they are now. Whereas Beauty Shop feels a lot more like, was Barbershop too manly for you? Here's one for the girls. Like, it doesn't feel like, hey, all you Barbershop fans, follow us over here. It was like, yeah, the female fans of the Barbershop films, here's one just for you guys, or if you couldn't get into Barbershop, maybe you'll like this one. And yeah, it's interesting because you talk about it like repeating a lot of the same plot beats and stuff like that, and it's like, yeah, I don't mind that, because like, I
so does Force Awakens, bro, and that movie rocked.
I mean, you're not wrong. It is my favorite Star Wars movie.
I think that this is also a interesting case of just like a pure spin-off.
Yeah,
and those are pretty rare.
Yeah, and so like, I think that it's like, what you were talking about like the special appearance by, I think that it's like, this film would have very much already been in development or like already been announced or whatever. And I think that it's like, hey, the special appearance means, hey, we're setting up the spinoff.
It's very quaint in the post-Marvel golden age, isn't it? But yeah, like if you look at film franchise Fortnite's history, I feel like the pure spin-offs are pretty rare thing, you know, like, and I think another great
what's the best spin-off. We did what's the best prequel and sequel.
The answer is Beauty Shop.
Yeah,
no, because like you look at something like Puss in Boots, the first Puss in Boots, right? That to me is a pure spin-off, and it's very rare that you get these like essentially plucking a character out of a story and putting them like there is one reference to the Barbershop crew in this film, and it's a photo that Gina has on her mirror at her workstation where you can faintly see Ice Cube in this photo, you know. And it's like, it really is it actually more a case of they soft launched
it's like
the
a
character.
Backdoor pilot almost.
Yeah. But, and all of this, that's fine. But isn't this funny to think of like this much going into like a character in Barbershop? You know what I mean? Like it's I don't know if I'd necessarily say the character particularly stands out or is particularly like any more compelling than anyone else. And so like maybe it was a case of like, we want to make this movie. Oh, let's.
I 100% think that it's like, Beauty Shop was planned, and then Queen Latifah was cast for Beauty Shop. Continue the franchise.
Booty Shop.
was cast for Beauty Shop, and then was then retroactively put into Barbershop 2 to set that up.
I reckon. think we've cracked it, Richard. We've cracked the mysteries. Yeah, we've also got Andy McDowell in this movie.
Yeah, and I think I don't have as much to say about Andy McDowell, to be fair, although there is a scene where she sort of like starts to revel in black culture a little bit, and there's one bit where she's eating collard greens, and holy fuck, man, collard greens are incredible.
What, like, you asked me while you were watching it, have I ever had collard greens? I was to understand collard greens are just like a medley of green vegetables. Yeah. Am I wrong?
Well, it's like that, but then just like, just mixed with like butter and fat and like, it's a friend of mine made them, and it's like, you know, I'm not sure if they are explicitly collard greens, but they were like greens, and they had like guanciale in them, which is like, you know, a type of pork, a cut of pork, and oh my god, that was like incredible. Yeah,
nice.
Never had them again, but oh my god, think about it all the time. Nice. And the guanciale like looks like these little cubes of tomato, and so was like sort of starting to eat around them, and then I realized what it was, and I was like, oh my god, now I've just got this little pile of guanciale.
Wow.
But yeah,
your distaste for healthy vegetables came back to give you a little win.
Yeah, well, tomatoes just...
Tomatoes actually technically a fruit.
Tomatoes creep me out.
Mina Savari is in this movie. Yeah. She plays a customer who offers Queen Latifah the chance to pitch her like patented hair conditioner to CoverGirl, but then when... what's the situation? She flirts with the one male salon person who has started dating Alicia Silverstone very recently, and Alicia Silverstone's like, hey, can you please not... Well, actually, she grabs his butt, which is crazy.
Yeah, Mina Savari grabs the guy's butt and is like...
Yeah. And she's like, how dare you speak to me like this? Queen Latifah, please fire Alicia Silverstone.
Send him to the principal's office to have him expelled.
Yeah. And she's like, well, you can say goodbye to your CoverGirl interview. And then that storyline, just genuinely, she just doesn't get the CoverGirl interview. Like, there's no
So that's like, oh my gosh, they're not going to blast into superstardom now. But then the Holler and Helen thing happens. But yeah, I like that. Because, yeah, it's like, that's their, oh, no, like, everything we were hoping for is done. The store's dead now. And then that happens. Mm. But, I like it that, like, the Mina Savari character is someone who, like, and the Alicia Silverstone character as well, they're both, like, these white girls that, like, in very different ways, like, want to be part of black culture. And so for Mina Savari, it means, like, getting plastic surgery and, like, it's like she looks down on black people but still is like envious of elements of their culture, and so she's trying to absorb those parts of their culture, but it's making her a worse person. Whereas Alicia Silverstone is actually like this really sweet southern gal who sees like the camaraderie and like the sisterhood of this beauty shop, and like that's what she sees like black culture as being. Then to see, you know, so they get to have their cake and eat it too a little bit with, like, you know, Mina Savari gets to be the sort of butt of a lot of jokes about, like, white women trying to, you know, get into that kind of culture. Whereas, like, yeah, and I really liked Alicia Silverstone's character, that she's, like, just this really sweet girl who looks up to these people and wants to be accepted by them. And then they end up being that it's, like, their friendship for her... And they're like, the fact that they stand up for her costs them this big deal. But it's like, well, you know, that's, you're fully accepted in this crowd now because because we're willing to put everything on the line to protect you.
Yeah. But what I actually wanted to, why I brought Mina Savari up, Richard, is because I always thought it was funny that she was in American Pie and American Beauty. Mm. And now I find out she's in Beauty Shop, which leads me to two questions, which you'll know the answer to.
Is she in a film called Pie Shop?
Is she in a film called Pie Shop is my question. Or another film with pie or shop in the title. Mm. And then does whatever the other word is in that title, is she then in another movie that has that other word in the title? Is she playing a game here? Is there a Mina Savari conspiracy, I guess, is my question. And I'm asking a man who I know is the fastest Googler alive to figure this out for me.
She's in a film called American Virgin.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
She's got an American trilogy?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's about the daughter of an adult film director who agrees to lose her virginity on screen despite her father.
That sounds great. What year did it come out?
It came out in 2000, and the tagline...
same time as American Pie and American Beauty.
Yeah, so it was...
That's crazy. She must have had a moment where she was like, I'm starring in three films about virgins that all have American in the title.
Yeah, the original title was Live Virgin or Live Virgin, but it was changed to American Virgin to capitalize on American Pie and American Beauty. And like, it's Bob Hoskins plays a dad in it, but it's
that's not as fun now that I know that it happened on purpose.
Robert Loggia plays the father. Bob Hoskins is also in it, but it's like all American Pie, all American Beauty, and now ... is the tagline to the film.
My picture of this film has radically changed after you reading me that tagline.
Should we see?
I was thinking
what it has on,
like a
Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I was thinking like an erotic thriller,
29%,
kind of like Cruel Intentions kind of thing.
She is also in, like an American Pie, obviously an American Reunion as well.
Yeah, I did think of that, but I don't know if I would say that counts towards her accumulative weird patterns in movie titles that she picks.
Yeah.
There is another character in this movie I want to discuss. A young, probably 12-year-old boy, I think his name is Willie, and he is a little sex pest. he's decided he's going to make a music video, so he walks around with a video camera filming women's butts, and all of this is horrendous. Like, he says some pretty, like, full-on stuff and there's a bit where he's flirting with a 12-year-old girl and he essentially, like, what we'd now identify as sexually harasses this girl. And it made me question, like, when you've got child actors playing opposite each other and they have lines like this, you know, like, what's the protocol there? Because it's not like he says to Queen Latifah, like, oh, you got big... It sounds like it says something to do with milk. I can't remember what the line is, but milk. It sounds like he could say she has big mommy milk, and she like throws him out of the shop. But when he's talking to another 12-year-old, and he says something like, what is it? It's like, I think it's about like her butt or something like that. It's like, oh, this is creeping me out. Anyway, all of this is justified, though, because he is filming everything and manages to get on tape Kevin Bacon's character, like, engaging in corporate espionage to shut down the pizza shop, which is how they win they save the day in the end, which is a confusing message to be like, hey,
film
you
everything.
Know what? There's a place for miniature sex pests in our society.
Well, AJ, you are a miniature sex pest.
Very good. Very good. Richard, next film we have to talk about, let's jump ahead to 2016. The world was bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Well, at the time, we thought this is one of the worst years of all time.
That's true, actually.
Because Alan Rickman died, David Bowie died, Prince was just about to die when this film came out.
Yeah. We are, of course, talking about Barbershop, The Next Cut, directed by Malcolm D. Lee. What do you think this has on Rotten Tomatoes?
I would guess quite high. I'm going to say, like... 88.
It's got 90%, making it the highest of the Barbershop films, which also makes it one of these rare legacy sequels that is a lot better received than any of the films. It's like aping nostalgia off, you know. What is Barbershop The Next Cut about?
So it's interesting because it's not really like the fact that a lot of time has passed is not really that important, other than the fact that their kid is now a teenager. And Ice Cube's kid, the kid at the end of the first one. And Yeah, so this one is about that there's like a been a rise in violence for in Southside Chicago around the area around the barbershop, and mainly due to like gang activity. And the sort of crux of the film, well, now the barbershop is also on one side of it is like a beauty salon now. So, you know, the men on one side, women on the other side, and that's the only way they were able to stay open. But also, you know, opens the cast up to being having a lot more people in it. And they get the sort of heads of these two gangs to agree to a ceasefire for 48 hours as like, and they'll do free cuts for that time. And so it's like putting on this big sort of like display of peace in their area and to sort of raise awareness and put an end to, because there's, you know, people running for office and things like this again. But yeah, to really sort of try to put an end to gang violence, or at least to raise awareness for the issue. And at the end of the film, Barack Obama comes in and gets his haircut.
Yeah. So yeah, like this is, as you say, the fact that it's all these years later doesn't really come into it. A lot of the characters, like the staff of the barbershop, is quite different, I guess. Eddie is even older. Yep.
Common joins the cast.
Common's there as a main character. Yep. Yes, Nicki Minaj, main character.
Regina
Very
Hall.
Interesting. Like, Nicki Minaj does not seem like... Like, I'm surprised she acts at all in anything, let alone, like, Barbershop 3. She must have been a fan.
Of all the films that you'd act... I mean, like, because you got to remember that, like, you know, the cast is, like, Eve, Ice Cube.
Yeah, true.
They're, like,
true.
All these people that are...
do you know Queen Latifah? Speaking of this... I looked up Queen Latifah because I was like, what's Queen Latifah even? I haven't thought of Queen Latifah in years. What's she even doing now? The opening line on her Wikipedia page, and you're going to be like, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But the opening line on her Wikipedia page is like, she is considered one of the best female hip-hop artists of all time.
Yeah.
I what's a Queen Latifah song? I can't think
what's
of
a Queen Latifah? it's interesting as well that you might not know this, but the Common appearing in this film, and like they're kind of like frenemies with Ice Cube, but that it's like one of
it's
the
quite surprising,
yeah, one of the biggest feuds in hip hop history was between Common and Ice Cube, and like you see, yeah, like in the 90s, it was the whole thing was that it was the whole sort of East Coast versus West Coast rivalry,
yeah.
And that, like I said before, NWA Ice Cube's group was one of the like. Yeah, like gangster rap, which is the, you know, a lot of the like more sort of violent rap and misogyny and all this stuff. And then Common released a song called I Used to Love Her, H-E-R, and which actually stands for like hip hop in essence is real or something like that. And so it's like, it's about, you know, I used to love this girl, but it's like actually about how you used to love hip hop. But then she moved to the West Coast and fell in with a bad crowd. And stuff. And then, like a year later, Ice Cube did a track where it was like, yeah, you used to love her. Now you're mad because we fucked your bitch. And then it like, ignited this huge feud. And yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, for people in mid-90s to hear that, like, oh, in 20 years' time, these guys are going to do like a family comedy together. Is like the craziest thing.
I don't know if I call these family comedies. They're pretty like there's a lot of swearing and shit.
Comedies.
So Anthony Anderson is also back in the cast. He now runs a catering service called Gangster Grub, which is like this underdeveloped B plot about him and his mum running it, and they like say they're accepting money for charity, but they're just put it all back into the business. I don't know. But not everyone came back. Missing from the cast is Dinka, who's a Nigerian character who was in the first two films. And also Michael Ealy was offered the response to reprise his role as Ricky Nash.
Which was Terry's husband.
Eve's boyfriend in the... Well,
yeah.
They begin dating in the second one.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah. And one of the reason he's not in it, I thought was very interesting. So, Ice Cube claimed in an interview that Michael Ealy was interested in co-starring in the sequel until he read the script. Cube reported that Ealy was displeased with the new direction and the screenwriters were taking the film and was disgusted by the dialogue and additional characters. Wow. Ealy allegedly said that this new film was not the barbershop he knew, and it tarnished the image and meaning of the original two films. I think very strange thing to say about three largely similar films.
Yeah.
Like, I did not feel at all like Barbershop 3 was even encroaching on
unless he's
the
just
legacy.
You're like disgustingly misogynistic and hates the idea that like they're sharing the barbershop with women. Count me out.
Maybe. Well, this is why Common was cast in the film, because originally that character was just going to be Ricky, because he's married to Eve, but didn't want to do it, so they had to invent a whole new character. But, you know, of course it's possible that someone would come into your life with the 12-year gap.
It is kind of like, it's one of those things that's like, you know, if you're watching this trilogy condensed, it is kind of weird that there's like this new character. But I think that like, you know, there's a long history of like rappers turned actors. And I think Common is probably one of the best ones, in my opinion.
Totally.
I think he's a really good actor.
So what did you think of Barbershop the Next Cut?
I thought it was great. I love this film. I loved all of these, man. I had such a good time watching these. This was nice Vember. And also the thing is, as well, interestingly, that like this is the franchise that our Discord decided to blindly watch along with. So we're going to have a lot of people... I'm hoping that Cult Elders will be a bit, this month will be a bit more in depth, but yeah, I think all the social commentary stuff and is like, it was really good. And I thought it was really interesting how, I mean, yeah, it's fascinating to watch like how different things were, how different things would have been if this film came out a year later, you know, like.
Yeah. So this film is awash with references to Obama, none of Trump. Trump's not even spoken aloud by
they
name.
Mention, they mention Hillary. They mention they that, she, mention that she probably ha- that she probably has side bitches and they're probably thick too.
And fuck, man, I found these. I hate when they get into these conversations. Like the one they have a conversation about Obama, where like every point of view is kind of insufferable. And maybe it's because I'm just too much of a radical leftist now that I find any kind of like tolerance of American presidents like laughable, right? Like like Ice Cube in this film is like, I think he's doing a really good job, and then when a guy who's impersonating Obama shows up in a credit scene to get a haircut, everyone's like, thank you for representing the black community and all these things. And it's just, I don't know, it feels icky because it's like the people writing this film are it feels like it's perspectives, like surface level perspectives from people who have money and privilege trying to be like, give Obama a break. He's done a good job with what he has. And I disagree with that sentiment, I guess. So that's where I kind of just found myself.
I think that it's like you know, in our privileged white position over here in New Zealand, it's very like, it's easy to forget that it's like just that it's like a black man was president and how outside of the realm of possibility that must have ever seemed, and just having that representation for like your kids and knowing like, you know, like you can hold the most powerful position in the world. And yeah, because like even just like, you know, I've been listening to the Scrubs rewatch podcast recently, and just even in that, like Donald Faison talking about like watching shows growing up, that's just like, holy shit, like, you know, I loved this show because it was just like there was a black kid on TV, like that was awesome. And so I think that it's like,
that's,
I mean, you know, that's obviously like 20 years before this, but I think that, you know, being the president, that I think that, you know, what you sort of say as being like this like tolerance of an American president is like, yeah, I mean, I think that it's, you know, it's a lot easier to be critical over here.
Yeah, but I also, I believe, like we had this here when you'd criticize just something Jacinda Ardern would do, and you'd get met with, like, the center-left friends that you might have being, like, you know, talking about how she's done this and done that. And I think Jacinda Ardern seemed like a nice person. I'm not, you know, I'm not attacking her character. But she failed in a lot of areas in which, like, she got the nickname Comrade Jacinda by the right. Yeah, right? And if you paid attention to her politics, that's a ridiculous thing to call her, because there are policies which she did or didn't act on which are, like, so laughably anti-communist that it's like, why are you calling her comrade? This is insane. I wish she was comrade. I wish. And it's the same sort of thing here, where, like, representation, I believe, is really good in media. Okay, that's something I'm very passionate about. When it comes to politics, don't get me wrong, there definitely should be representation in politics. But when it's the president and it's a man who is still committing war crimes and still bombing places, I guess I'm just like, this identity politics stops mattering, I think, when you're in that position and have that opportunity to do that much with your representation or with your power. I don't know why I think Barbershop the Next Cut is the perfect place for my anti-Obama tirade. Where else would I, what other franchise would I do?
I mean, I just think it's again this that thing that it's like, I'm quite happy to have this celebration of Black culture and film, but I'm like, why do you want to keep bringing it down? Like, what did you want them to say to Obama when he comes into their shop at the end?
I kind of thought that scene was pretty cheesy anyway. I don't know if
I mean, it plays through the credits, but it's like, yeah, I mean, I'm quite happy for them to just have fun.
Yeah, I'm of two minds about it, because it was kind of funny. And Eddie
fucks up the haircut.
And he'd previously claimed that he'd cut Barack's hair back in the day, like 20 years ago or whatever. And then he's like, yeah, I remember you, and sits down, and then Eddie fucks up the haircut. A joke they use in all the movies.
Yeah.
It's someone getting distracted and accidentally cutting a chunk out of an important person's hair.
Do
you have anything else?
I thought it was a great film.
Nice.
I think Lamar Morris was a fun addition as well.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, like, again, like, talking about, like, representations of, like, masculinity and, like, male role models, he's like a very different, you know, a lot more modern type of man than someone like Ice Cube, who's very sort of traditional family values, masculinity. Lamar Morris is just a funny dude. Slays me.
Do you have anything else you want to say about the Barbershop franchise, or should we move on to our little seggies?
What did you think of Nicki Minaj's acting, by the way?
Fine.
Yeah, I thought she was pretty decent, to be honest. Like, it is distracting that it's Nicki Minaj, just because it's like, I'm so
because
aware
she's
of her.
Beautiful, beautiful, like, supermodel that's just been plopped into a barbershop.
And Regina Hall's fun. Like, I thought she was a great addition to the franchise as well. Yeah, I think they cut the cast of this.
Let's get Regina
Hall's
spinoff.
That's great.
Let's get Beauty Shop 2 with Regina Hall. Continue the franchise is coming up next, everybody. Continue the franchise. This is a segment where we pitch our own, which I sort of maybe just spoiled Richard's one, it sounds like. But before we get to our own pitches for continuing the franchise, did you know that a short-lived TV show adaptation was produced of Barbershop after Back in Business in 2005, which recast and in some cases renamed all of the characters? I believe that the character's name is Dinka in the first two films. In the TV show, it was changed to Yinka because that's an actual Nigerian name. Dinka was just something they've made up. Omar Gooding plays Calvin, so that's Ice Cube's character. Yeah, everyone was recast, basically. And according to Wikipedia, while the original films were no stranger to controversy, the series uses humor to more deeply explore a variety of issues related to the contemporary African-American community, including drug abuse, entrepreneurship, local politics, and use of the N-word. This is very evident with episode titles such as "This Is My Bullshit and You're Welcome to It," N-word, Lovers, Madonna is a hoe and Dane is fucking blind. And Whose Pussy Is That? These are all episode titles. It ran for one season of 10 episodes before Showtime cancelled it. However, in April of 2023, after previously acquiring MGM, Amazon announced plans to expand the franchise with a new television series in development through Amazon Studios. Mm. So we're getting more Barbershop. It's coming in TV show form.
Yay.
What's your continue the franchise, Richard?
I want to see Beauty Shop 2.
Wow.
Back in business. Yeah, I mean, I was thinking originally beauty. Just bringing back Queen Latifah and doing, you know, a distant sequel to that film. But yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely more to explore with Regina Hall's character. And like, because initially I was like, oh, you know, I would love to see how the Barbershop would deal with, like, I think that a 2020 set Barbershop film would be really interesting, that it's like you have, you know, COVID, social distancing and everything, but then obviously the George Floyd, Black Lives Matter protests. But then I was like, yeah, I don't want to just, like, center it around this, like, total bummer, you know?
Totally.
But I think, I mean, more so COVID, like, it kind of fits with Barbershop, that it's like, you know, dealing with COVID, and I'm sure you would have a lot of fun stuff with Eddie and that, but then to have... That,
or
like,
would you? Because Ice Cube actually holds these dicey opinions about COVID.
Yeah.
So would he still be down for it? It's funny, in Barbershop 3, the one of the characters who's played by Utkarsh Ambakdar, who's a Indian character, he says the line, there has never been a better time to be a black man in America. He's not black himself, but he says that to the other characters. And it's like, it would be a bummer to come back and be like, it's now pretty bad to be in a black in America. Like, I don't even know if that was true at the time, to be honest. But, yeah. I've written here for my continue the franchise, Barbershop Apocalypse or Barbershopalypse. Because I just think this cast of characters would be great in, like, a Walking Dead scenario. You know? Like, it's a zombie outbreak and the barbershop is one of the only refuges in Southside, right?
That's great. And, well, because you've got Eddie just standing at the door going, no, stop.
Yeah. And you've got all these fun characters fighting zombies, you know? This came to me very naturally, this idea, because I think there's something very zombie apocalypse about this cast, and it would be interesting to see where they would go.
I think an Ice Cube zombie movie feels long overdue.
Totally. Yeah. Richard, the last thing we've got to do now is to... Well, actually, the second to last thing we've got to do now is to rank that franchise. Over on Letterboxd, the Cop Option Letterboxd, look us up. We've got a list of every franchise we've ever covered, and we rank them. Richard, we rank them baby. And we're going to add the Barbershop to this list now. So... we're talking Gold Star, potentially. I do think that we at least need to acknowledge that one of our rules for Gold Stars is to take the critical consensus into account. But in this case, it's just
the critics are wrong. Critics are sexist.
Well, it's not. I just think it's like... it seems like a lot of the reasons why these would have been ranked so poorly would be because of the time they came out in.
Racism.
Race and, well, I was thinking like sexism with the case of Beauty Shop. It's like, yeah, that's probably why the entire male base of reviewers didn't like it. So where are we thinking Barbershop needs to go in our ranking?
Well, I'm thinking it definitely needs a Gold Star.
Yep.
I'm thinking, throw out a number to me or a franchise that you're wondering if it's better than.
Okay, is it better than Nymphomaniac?
I think, okay, so I was ignoring your question because it's so obviously better than Nymphomaniac. I'm thinking it's like better than El Mariachi.
Okay, where's that?
In 42. I'm happy to go higher. That's me giving you a talking point.
So above... Yeah, above El Mariachi, we've got Ghostbusters.
And I would say it's probably better than Ghostbusters.
Probably pound for pound better than Ghostbusters. But then we land at 28 Days Later, which I don't think it is better than.
Yeah. So, I can, yeah, let's go 41.
Sweet. I've lost the film. Okay, 41. We are ranking Barbershop, the Barbershop Quartet, as franchise 41. Hope everyone playing the Where Do They Rank It game
lost.
I hope you had a horrible day. cool. All right. Well, Richard, all we've got to do now is go over to Patreon, where the patrons have voted on what the next franchise is that we will spend the next 2 weeks of our lives drowning ourselves in. Richard, is it still Nicevember?
Yeah, so this still counts as Nicevember, which is...
So we asked people for nice franchises.
Yeah, French nices.
French nices. And it looks like the prevailing winner for this one, Richard, let me just do a double check, make sure nothing else has pipped it at the post, or is it mostly the same?
Yeah, no, the it's now got a much wider lead as well.
We are covering the five films, there's two distinct canons, but five films in the Addams Family franchise. Richard, this will be our first Thanksgiving tie-in we've ever done in film.
Oh, wow.
Fortnights. A holiday neither of us celebrate, and frankly nor should Americans. that's coming at you guys next fortnight. We're doing the Addams Family, so there's three live action films and two recent animated ones. Hopefully they are fun and nice. That's all I ask.
Yeah.
Of Nicevember franchises. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. If you liked this, then why don't you come to our version of a barbershop, which is the Discord, which you can find a link to that in the show notes. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter /X, or as they're now calling it, X, and in brackets formerly known as Twitter, because that's what a successful rebrand looks like, right? And if you want to support us financially, you can do so over at patreon.com/coldpopshire, where one of the things you get among bonus episodes, among being able to decide which franchises we watch, you also get to give us something called a post-credit scene, which is coming at you right after this music ends. Richard, it's been a pleasure podcasting with you. I hope you like your haircut that I've secretly given you.
Wow.
During this time.
What a brilliant thing to say.
What? God, you're brilliant, AJ. God, you're good. 5 dollars to the post-credit scene. This is a segment at the end of each episode. If you donate $5 or more over at patreon.com/coldpopshire, you get to give us something to talk about in this, the post-credit scene. Richard, what is it and who's it from?
Today's one comes to us from Jason White, the touring fourth member of Green Day, who says, what is the pettiest slight that you are still holding on to? Now... God,
should
like
we remove slights between the two of us?
Well, I was like, to narrow it down, I'll just do slights I have against you. But the
okay,
like,
no, do it.
You could name any person in my life, and I could tell you like a little grudge I still hold against them. I like this question. It feels so specifically tailored to me that it's like I actually can't even narrow this down. There's some ones who I have against AJ that I can. That I can tell you now. One is the time that he, while I was at work all day, ate all of our chicken cordon bleu in the freezer. There was the Final Destination episode of Cult Popshire, which is a less talked about thing. I don't even know if we've actually told the full story there, but that's one. There's, what else? Oh, there was a time that I... I really needed some cable to get something set up, and you were working at the uni, and there was a PB Tech at the uni, and I was like, could you pick up this cable for me? And you were just like, oh, like, do I have to, like...
There is not a PB Tech at the uni, Richard. It's about a half an hour walk down Queen Street.
No, there's that one, but there's also one at the uni.
I had no memory of that PBT.
And then so I was like, oh, okay, well, so then I had to go, you know, like
I don't even remember this.
Yeah, but it's still a slight I hold against you.
God, you must be, you heavy must your heart be, Richard, because I don't have any slights. I don't think I have any slights against anyone. I'm not a very slighty person. One slight that you have against me, though, that I'd like to bring up, because I think it's really funny. And let me tell the story, and then I will allow you to uninterrupted rebuttal. And do you know what? Then we'll end the post-credits
scene. Okay.
So I'm giving you the last word upon the agreement that you'd let me tell the story first.
Yeah.
Yep. So back very early back in the days of the podcast, we covered the Beethoven franchise. And I don't know why or how, but for some reason we got it in our heads that at the time, because Beethoven was in straight to DVD territory, there existed a possibility that we could direct Beethoven 9. Right? And we came up with this idea of like, because the Beethoven series gets like really meta later on, but the funny thing is like, for whom is it getting meta? Because we'll be the oldest people who have ever watched them. Like, they're made for children, and children aren't going to appreciate discovering that the 7th Beethoven movie is a meta sequel that takes place as if Beethoven is cast in the first Beethoven movie.
Yeah.
Kids don't care about that shit. So we were going to lean into that and make a movie about Beethoven being a movie star. And I can't remember what ideas we pitched, but I do remember that the title that was landed by us upon us was Lights, Camera, Beethoven, right? And I remember this as being my sole contribution to the project was that title. Months go by. We don't talk about our plans to direct Beethoven 8 or 9 or whatever it is. And somehow I bring up, oh, like the title that I made up, Lights, Camera, Beethoven. Richard loses his mind at this. And he's like, AJ, I came up with the title. And I was like, oh, I remember coming up with it. And he was like, he stood up, he left the room, furious at me. And the thing is like, I am not a person that gets joy out of getting this reaction out of someone. Like, I don't want that. I don't want you to feel bad or frustrated or like I'm stealing your idea. And I hate to tell you this, Richard, there have been plenty of occasions where I've just rolled over because I think you're wrong on something, but I'm just like, oh, whatever, I don't want another Lights, Camera, Beethoven situation to happen. And I wasn't being a dick about it, I just remembered coming up with it, right? Now, all these years later, what I find extra special and extra spicy about the story is I no longer remember coming up with the title. But I do remember the feeling of being so sure that I had come up with it. So I'm left here all these years later thinking, I still think I came up with it.
With like an echo of a feeling.
Yeah, an echo of a feeling. I don't remember coming up with it anymore, but I remembered the feeling of being dumbfounded that you thought you came up with it when it was like the only thing I'd contributed to the idea. And you'd like designed the plot and you'd vaguely started like working out here's how we could actually direct Beethoven 9. Like, that was all you. I feel like the single thing I said was Lights, Camera, Beethoven, and then you from my perspective, you loved that title so much that you could not separate yourself from it.
That's so funny because like in your attempt to be like, yeah, I actually don't have any petty slights, you just, and you're like, don't worry, you'll get a chance to tell your side of the story. I have nothing else to add. I don't really remember this.
You don't remember it? That's crazy. But the, oh my god, that's so funny.
I remember, like, again, I remember you having pointed this out to me after the fact. I don't actually remember the, like, I got up and walked out. But it's like, this is clearly a slight that you're holding on to.
Well, Richard,
to answer Jason's question.
You know what we should do then? You know what we should do? Is we should call a truce, and I'll tell you what, mate, let's just not make Beethoven.
No, I still want to.
All right, well, it's got to be called Lights, Camera, Beethoven. And I want,
well, yeah, of course, because I came up with that.
Half the royalties.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.